Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Yeah, thanks, Wallace. The golf episode once again. Soph, g'day. Nice to see you. We've got something big coming up a bit later today. But first of all, can you tell me, have you been playing any golf since last time we spoke?
Well, I've been playing a little bit of golf, but not much, if I'm honest. I'm still recovering from the sinus infection and almost bursting an eardrum from the girls' trip. So I've played about 9 holes, and that's about it. It's a bit sad, Hookie.
The golf trip has become like an encyclopedia. There's another chapter every week.
It's ever going. But I will say my voice is finally sounding a little bit better. It's only got a slight croak every now and then.
Do you have friends that lead you less astray than this lot? Maybe you could look at some friends a little bit more calm. Someone who's not going to lead you down the garden path like this lot have done. I'm blaming them, not you, by the way.
Yeah, I wish I could put all the blame on them, but I don't think I can, unfortunately. I do recall me being the ringleader in quite a few of our shenanigans throughout the weekend, but we do shit around. That's why they're my closest friends, Hookie. That's why they are my closest friends.
Well, talk about golf and closest friends. You are going to be my closest friend a little bit later on today because this is going to be my first golf in a month, and you and I are going to have a hit at Tea Tree Gully, and I'm actually looking forward to it. Not that I've ever played Tea Tree Gully that well, but I'm just glad to get out there, and I want to just see, they've done a little bit of work here and there. I probably haven't been there for 3 or 4 years, so I'm actually looking forward to just getting out, walking a few holes, see if I've still can work out which end of the club to pick up.
Well, I'm actually feeling a bit the same way. I don't know if my body is going to hold up for the limited holes that we'll probably be playing, but I'm actually the same. I haven't played Tea Tree Gully in probably 2 to 3 years. I went and watched our Simpson Cup boys play there at the beginning of the year, and it's looking great. So I can't wait to get out there and hit a few shots.
Yeah, no, it'll be good fun. It's a very, very popular course. I mean, there isn't a lot around it, so it has a huge membership. I think they do a really good job with their members. It's a relatively tight parcel of land. But anyway, let's not worry about what we think about it now, because we're going to be putting up some video clips later this week. We're going to catch up with Craig Sullivan Brook, their general manager. There might be one or two other people floating around. It's their twilight night tonight. So it's going to be great just you and me hitting a couple of holes. The last time we played together, I seem to remember someone hit one pretty close, or maybe even closer than close in. Can you recall that story for us, please?
Wallace, can we just get him to stop bringing up this hole in one? I'm actually sick of it. I'm absolutely sick of it. And I do recall it was actually a scramble match, Hookie. So it's a team hole in one. Please wrap your head around that. There was no name on the scorecard.
Sophie approached me ages ago about coming and helping out this podcast, and I thought that's a really good idea because I can just talk about my hole in one pretty much every episode. Let's start talking about something far more important than my hole in one, and that's how we start the show every week with Sophie Starr.
Well, Hookie, probably bending the rules yet again.
Oh, no, you haven't.
A little bit. Look, I'm actually going for Queensland golfer, so I know she's not South Australian.
That's okay.
We're giving that the pass?
Yeah. That's okay. I mean, normally you tell me that you're bending the rules a little bit. You've completely snapped them into pieces. So the fact that you've stuck with a golfer is amazing in my mind.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I've gone Hannah Reeves. I actually managed to play a lot of amateur golf with Hannah Reeves. She's only just turned professional, and in her debut at Molly Mook, won her first event. She then turned it around, Hookie. Second round at Wagga Wagga, New South Wales Open qualifier. She's won again with a 7-under final round. It's absolutely incredible. And I'm glad I haven't had to twist this because you're giving me the pass. But my pass around this, that she's not South Australian, is actually her last amateur event was the South Australian amateur played at the Vines Golf Club. And do you know what? South Australia prepared her for professional golf. And I reckon we played a major role in getting her those 2 wins.
Always take credit where it's not due, I reckon. So if I've made a career out of that, it's nice to see that you're following in my footsteps. I have to be perfectly honest. I had to give you a pass for a Queensland golfer because I am treading on Wallace's toes here. I want to tell you the story of a baseballer that if you're people like us who are very, very focused on South Australia, may not be aware of, but I think this is probably the most incredible story in sport for the year. We're talking about the National League Championship Series. It was game four. So the LA Dodgers are playing the Milwaukee Brewers. And there's a Japanese player called Shohei Ohtani, who is renowned as one of the best players in the world. He's a two-way player, so that means that not only can he bat and hit, he's a very, very good pitcher as well. He's the leadoff batter and was also the starting pitcher in this game four. He starts as the pitcher, walks the first batter, then goes strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. He steps up to the plate at his first at-bat, hits a home run. He goes on to pitch six innings, two hits, no runs, so a shutout for those six innings. And he smashed three home runs. One of them was 469 feet. It's regarded as one of the greatest baseball performances postseason of all time. I'll put it to you like this, Soph. It's like Tiger in 1997 when he won the Masters by 12 strokes, I think. Imagine Cameron Green scoring a double century and taking 12 wickets for the match. It's like Secretariat winning Belmont by 31 lengths. So, yeah, very little to do or nothing to do with golf, but something to do with sport that just completely blew me away this week. So I just wanted to share with our listeners the Shohei Ohtani story, LA Dodgers, the greatest performance in baseball postseason history. It was quite remarkable.
Look, it is remarkable, Hooky. Am I right in that Ben's best is not a golfer? Is that correct?
He might play golf in his spare time, so might play a social round at a few of the suburban Los Angeles courses. That's okay, isn't it?
No wonder I've just got the absolute hall pass for choosing a Queenslander. At least it's a golfer.
Oh, well, hang on. Last week we had a cricket show and you chose a marathon runner. I mean, give me a spell, mate. You cannot look down on me for going a baseballer. Caitlin Adams, one of the all-time great South Australian performances, Shohei Ohtani, I'm going to work with. Hey, let's just quickly spin through some news that's been going on across the golfing world for the week. I thought the biggest story of the week was the fact that PGA Tour CEO Brian Rolapp, who is taking over from Jay Monahan as the head of the US PGA Tour, he really has started to talk about a pretty major restructure. We're seeing some staff being moved on from the global home headquarters there at Ponte Vedra Beach. Now, they're also starting to shift things like the Champions Tour could be up for a cut, even a cull altogether. The course management program, the TPC courses, look like they're under threat as well. He's bringing a lot of NFL people in and moving some traditional golf people out. I think ultimately what we're going to see here, Sophie, is that they'd like to have less events, but the ones they keep, they'll be bigger events. So rather than have 45 events for the year and you see some big ones and some small ones, you might see 25 events for the year, even 20 events for the year, but they'll all be absolute bangers. I'm interested in your thoughts. Do you prefer to be able to watch some golf every week or would you prefer to watch great golf half of the year?
It's a tough call, Hooky, because I reckon your diehard fans, I think they are probably watching every single week, regardless of the prize money and regardless of who's playing. And I probably do kind of fall into that category a little bit, but I'm not really that interested in the all-time winner. I'm more just interested in watching golf. So I do think, look, I think I'm more interested in watching 20 incredible events than I am at 46. If they're getting all the players, all the world's best to those 20 events, and it's a like almost like a mini major, I mean, I would be way more interested. And I think those big players will probably then jump on some other tours and we might see them going across the world a bit more rather than all the golf just being in the PGA. And to be honest, I'm just watching the same golf over and over and over again. You know, it's that long rough, they're just, you know, bombing it as far as they can and then just hacking it out and two putting or one putting or whatever it is. So I think this is like a long-winded response to saying I probably am liking where it's going.
Yeah, I always feel like the 45 events was based on that was what suited the secondary tier players, guys that were on the PGA Tour but were ranked 150, 200 in the world. And I think for us as fans, we're going to appreciate less events that mean a lot more. So I hope you're right, Soph. I do hope that that is the way it heads, that they lean it down a bit, create some scarcity, and create a lot more interest in the fewer events that they run. Mm-hmm. Let's come a little bit closer to home. I want to talk about the Macau Open, which was played in China. It's on the Asian Tour. We addressed it last week because Jack Buchanan got a special invite into the event. Two South Australian lads did really, really well. Jack Thompson, so one of the two Jacks. He finished with a 1-over-71 to drop from T5. So he was absolutely flying along, dropped down to T10, but he picked up $15,000 US. And Jack Buchanan finished in a tie for 39th. So he picked up 6.4K US. Not a bad little check for someone who wasn't expecting to play in the event. He did open with a 4-under par 66. So to finish at 5-under, probably a little bit disappointing for Jack, but great effort for both of those guys. Good money for them that they can use to continue to invest back into their careers.
Yeah, incredible effort for both of them. And particularly, like you said, for Jack Buchanan, Butch didn't even know he was really in that event until, what, like a week out, and had to make all those plans. It was a big rush. And I think it's a great start to what I think is a 6 to 9 week stretch of golf he's got coming up. So I think it's an excellent start. Like you said, he shot 4-under in his first round, so probably 5-under is a bit disappointed. But to keep that up for 4 days straight under that immense pressure, I think he's done an incredible job.
We keep our attention on South Australians in, well, good-sized events. We had a couple of our women from South Australia playing the New South Wales Open Women's Regional Qualifier. So this was at Wagga Wagga. You've just referenced it. Hannah Reeves shot 7-under on the final day to win by one from Jun Zhang. Crystal Blum 4-over, probably a little bit disappointed with that. But Caitlin Pearce was right in the mix. She shot 5-under across the two rounds, 69-72 over the 2 days. So Caitlin's game's developing very nicely as she heads to Wollonga for the WebEx Series this coming week.
Yeah, it's incredibly trending. I think she was actually in that final group. Well, not the final group, but she was in that group with Hannah Reeves. So got to see Hannah shoot that last round of 7-under. And I actually spoke to Caitlin recently and she told me Hannah was boxing the world. And unfortunately, her putter was just a little bit cold. But shooting 5-under with a cold putter's looking pretty good for Wollonga if she can get that putter going hot.
I'll say. I'm just going to take you through a couple of the worldwide events at the India Championship on the DP World Tour. Tommy Fleetwood won that, shot a 7-under 65 in the final round to beat Kato Nakajima by 2. Fleetwood finished at 22-under. It was a weird course. Rory McIlroy didn't take driver, Soph. I mean, that just strikes me as completely unbelievable. The greatest driver in the history of the game doesn't take driver on a course. So it's an unusual place for them to play. The BMW Ladies event, which was played in Korea, was won by Se-young Kim at 24-under. She won by 4 from Nasa Hatayoka. Hatayoka's had a very, very good career here at Women's Australian Opens in Australia. It was a great run for the Aussie girls too. So Hannah Green finished in a tie for 5th. Minji Lee and Steph Kiriaki were both tied 10th. Cassie Porter, Karis Davidson, Grace Kim, Gabby Ruffles a little bit further down in that event. But yeah, the Aussie girls really shaping very nicely. So seven of them to be in that event, 3 of them in the top 10 is a great result.
Yeah, it's an absolute hurler of a result. And I cannot wait for them to come down to Australia and play in some of our events. Those names are really starting to stand out, but I want to give a shout out to Steph Kiriaki. She's having an amazing end to the season. So I'm really excited to see her in Australia and competing.
I can't go past just mentioning the WA Open very shortly. It was played at Mount Lawley over there in Perth. Tough course. Oliver Becker won it at 7-under. Had the most bizarre last hole, Soph. I don't know if you caught up with this, but it's a par 5. You did? You saw it?
Yeah.
He decided to putt from probably 10 yards off the green, had about a 90-yard putt. He was obviously that nervous with his chipping game that he decided to play putter from well off the green, nearly putted it into the bunker, had to make his next putt left-handed, push that 10 feet past, and if he didn't make that, he was off to a playoff. Hold the putt, which was just incredible. So congratulations to Oliver Becker. The big story there, Lockie Barker finished in a tie for 3rd place. So he's just a guy that I reckon if he gets just a little opportunity, Soph, we might see Lockie Barker head in the similar direction as what Jack Buchanan has done to start to get himself established and get himself some status internationally.
Yeah, 100%. And guess what? Lockie Barker is competing in the WebEx Series, which I'm sure we're about to talk about, and you're about to lead me down that path. So I'm looking forward to talking about Lockie Barker.
Just a couple of other things that went on. The SAPGA Associates event was at Port Hughes last week. Harry Coote, good mate of yours, at 1 under, defeated Joe Hodgson, a lad that I'm good mates with, certainly mates with his dad anyway. Joe Hodgson was 1 over. Ollie Pritchard was 6 further back. It's a bit embarrassing when I keep talking about how I'm mates with all of these guys' dads. Ollie Pritchard is from Victor Harbour, where his dad Ian is the club pro up there. So Harry Coote these days at Glenelg, but I know he's played a lot of golf with you at Royal Adelaide. Joe Hodgson, as I said, at Mount Osmond. Acacia Curtis is a story. I didn't know much about her, and you might have come across her, Soph. Plays at Aston Hills. She shot 32 on the front nine at Port Hughes, the Copper Club there, including 2 eagles and a double bogey. So that could have been anything that final round.
It absolutely could have been anything from her. But yeah, like you said, I'm a friend of Harry Coote. I've played a lot of golf with him. He's unfortunately had me on his bag. I'm surprised he didn't ask me back. He actually asked SA legend Billy Cawthorn, and I was a bit upset about that one. But clearly Billy got him over the round and I think over the line, and the one game that I caddied for him, he actually lost that pennant match. So that's probably why he didn't ask me back, Hookie.
I tell you what, he shares himself around with top end of town. I mean, you're a star amateur player, and Billy Cawthorn has been an absolute gun for South Australia as well. So he certainly knows to get the – I'll call him Fred Astaire, because he picks a good partner to dance with, old Harry, doesn't he?
He definitely does.
Senior pennant wrap, Tea Tree Gully. I don't know what happened today. I might have to look that up, and we'll put that up in the show notes. Tea Tree Gully was playing Cooyonga today in the big – Division One senior pennant match. A couple of really cool stories out of there. Tea Tree Gully are gunning for their 12th title in the 15 years that the event has been running. They've got so many unbelievable named players: Norm Cordina, Chris Everett, Craig Gordon, Ken Brown, Andrew Simpson. So they're undefeated so far. They were playing Cooyonga today. It was wet. But yeah, so that is an incredible record. They won the first 9 years of that competition, Tea Tree Gully, which is sort of hard to believe. You would have thought that most of the best senior players come out of the Tier 1 clubs, but Tea Tree Gully have been an absolute star there. The other thing that I think is interesting out of local senior pennant at the moment, it's always been a men's competition, but Christine Trimmer is playing for the Vines and Gail McPherson is playing for Blackwood. So I'm sure you would appreciate that, because for these top-end amateur senior women, there's really nowhere else for them to play.
No, there definitely isn't. Whilst I'm jumping in as well, Hookie, I can actually tell that Cooyonga defeated Tea Tree Gully in the senior pennant. 6-1, so it was actually a smashing as well. Results must have only just come up as we've started this podcast. But yeah, look, on Gail McPherson and Christine Trimmer, I played a lot of golf with both of them. They actually both play in the open pennant as well. But I think it's amazing that those girls are being able to compete in the seniors, because like you said, there's no senior event for the women. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I'm glad to see them both out there and playing.
A couple of other quick news I'll wheel around. I just want to congratulate Phil Chapman, Paul Gregory and Amanda Heapy, who were part of the South Australian senior team that went to the Australian Amateur. It was played at Monash Country Club in New South Wales. I heard the greens were like absolute lightning, Soph. They're talking about Cooyonga times 4. They were really challenging. Phil Chapman finished in a tie for 15th. Paul Gregory finished in a tie for 33rd. And Amanda Heapy was in a tie for 24th in the women. They finished 4th overall in the teams event, those three. Dave Patterjohns from Wollonga also played in that event as well. But that's a great effort from some of our South Australian seniors. While we're on seniors, Nick Wake, who we were talking about, and won the Glenelg Club Championship just a couple of weeks ago. Now he's won the Glenelg Senior Championship, Soph. And I just want to mention Sandy Creek Golf Club, that won the club's SA Medium Club of the Year. And for a little club like Sandy Creek, that is an incredible effort as well.
Yeah, incredible effort. And yeah, Nick Wake, he was a close call for Sophie Starr, but I didn't know if we could go back-to-back weeks with him.
Poor old Nick. He would have deserved it, Soph, but no, I can't argue with who you ended up with. Right, I do want to touch very quickly on the WebEx Series tournament that is at Wollonga this weekend. For those of you who aren't sure of what the WebEx Series events are, these are a series of tournaments that are held for male and female professionals and elite amateurs to line up together. Now, the Wollonga event is hosted by former Australian cricketer Greg Blewett, very good golfer in his own right as well at Tea Tree Gully and Cooyonga. It's worth $200,000. It'll begin on Thursday. It's part of the Challenger PGA Tour of Australia series and, of course, the WPGA Tour of Australasia. The defending champion is Jack Buchanan. He was 10 strokes off the lead after the opening round last year and then shot a 62 closing round, 8 under. Just absolutely blew the field away to win by three. So, I've got a couple of questions for you on this. But first of all, I actually like Lachie Barker in this event. I don't know if you've been following the WPGA Tour or the Australasian Tour much, but who do you like in this event coming up now that Jack is out of the field? He's off to, I think, the Philippines this week.
Yeah, look, I'm actually liking our South Australians in general. They're obviously going to know the course, and all of these South Australians have played this WebEx series quite a few times. So I'm looking at the SA girls to watch, which would be, like you said, Caitlin Pearce, who's coming off a strong stretch of golf for the past fortnight, but also Still Blum, who's always a strong contender in these SA events. She's from Grange Golf Club. And like you said, we've got Lachie Barker, but I also reckon Jack Carter is just having an amazing few years. He's been going through the traineeship program and he's just a standout. I think he's from Lynx Lady Bay, if I'm right.
That's right. You've got it in one, so.
Yep. So he's used to that region and I think he is definitely someone to watch out at Wollonga Golf Club.
Self-taught as well, Jack Carter. Mm-hmm. Never had a golf lesson in his life. And if ever his game's a bit out of kilter, he just works it out himself. And he's completely free of he doesn't worry about technique. All he worries about is just feel. He's an amazing story. Of course, I should mention the All Abilities Tournament will also be at Wollonga, won by, what's his last name? So Spud. I only know him as Spud. Everyone knows him as Spud.
I was about to say, I know him as Spud.
Won by Spud last year, and I bet you, and he's a Wollonga boy, so he'll know his way around as well. Good old Spud. Hey, Lachie Barker grew up there as well. He's in great form. We talked about him as a T3. So just one question I want to ask you about this. So we've had 4 years now of these WebEx Players Series where the men and the women have been mixed together. Of the 20 events, 17 have been won by men and only 3 by women. One of them was Hannah Green, who sort of came back and, you know, was always going to dominate. She's just that good a player. Do you think that's they need to get that kilter a bit closer to parity? Obviously, it's a smaller women's field than a men's field, but as someone who has probably maybe aspired to play in these sorts of events before, are we making it too hard for the women?
Look, it's a really good question. We could probably do a whole entire podcast on this. I do think it's really hard to set a tournament up to suit both the women and the men. I mean, even just looking at Wollonga, Wollonga's a short course for both men and women, and you can't really make it any longer for the men. It's on a short parcel of land. And it's not like you can start teeing off the women way in front as well. As it is, a lot of women don't hit driver on this golf course because they don't need to. And then you've just got to look at the greens. I mean, the men are coming in. They're kind of all hitting it to the same spot. The men are coming in instead then with sand wedges and pitching wedges whilst the girls are hitting, you know, 9 irons, 8 irons.
Yeah.
And that's just a difference to get it to the hole. The closer the shorter the club, the closer you're going to get it. It's just a challenge. Like you said, the women's field is smaller. So I don't know if it's potentially, you know, having the amount of wins that the women already have is probably actually a good result in the end. Because the women's field would be what, like a third of the size of the men?
It's about that, Soph. Yeah, you're pretty much spot on. So I did a count. There's 22 pros and 3 amateurs from the women's field that will join in. And I reckon it's about, it's about 120 all up that I think are in the field. So it's probably closer to a quarter. So on those numbers, 3 from 20 is probably
not that bad.
Far off what parity actually is. I think the other challenge as well is if it was set up that women were winning it most weeks, I reckon because they're only smaller events, a few of the bigger name blokes in particular might take a pass on these sorts of events, and that would be unpleasant as well. So it's tough to find that medium when you have women and men in the same field. It is a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think for these smaller events, I do quite like the fact that the women and the men are together because I do think it's bringing out more spectators, and I think the women are getting more, they're getting showcased more. Like, for example, WebEx last year, Catherine Norris came tied second, I reckon. She chipped in for birdie on the last hole. I think she might have been leading almost coming into round 4, but you're taking me back 12 months. So it's not, you know, she wouldn't otherwise be really seen. Like if I go and look at what happened at Wagga Wagga, where the girls played last weekend, I've got to admit the media coverage of that event was pretty shocking and pretty poor to follow. It basically only ever followed the final round of the women and you didn't even really see Hannah Reeves that much and she ended up winning the event. So I think the fact that these events are men and women, I think we're getting more media coverage for the women and I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, that, I mean, let's not be too critical of golf in New South Wales. I mean, they're doing these things on an absolute shoestring budget, and 100%. I get it. And it's great that they're making the effort to do anything at all. I mean, look, you know, here's my theory. I think Golf Australia SA should be considering trying to televise our local pennant competitions. If they're all at the same field, you've got all the same players there, just set one fixed camera on about the 14th or the 15th hole and get someone to commentate as all of those men and women come through. I think you'd get some interest in that. And even if you didn't, it just builds and builds and allows those sorts of things to develop. We can watch softball, local softball goes on a live streaming service, same as all the cricket matches. I don't know why golf doesn't think like that. So that's a bit of an aside there. But, yeah, certainly that is an area where golf and community golf can certainly learn to just start to think about how they can play their part in that and develop it, because I would love to be able to watch that sort of an event on a live stream. I'd happily tune in while I'm doing other work on a Friday afternoon. Good point, Soph, but we've got to move on because this was what we really wanted to feature in on today, and that is your deep dive on the Cooyonga Golf Course. As we know, it's going to host the Women's Australian Open next year, and we learnt only just over a week ago that it will now host LIV Adelaide in 2027. You and I both love this course. Let me just share with you a little bit of information about it before we get your thoughts. So the current captain there is Jeff Brennan. The current vice captain is Rowan Filkey. I know both of those guys really well. Jeff Brennan's a very, very good golfer. Rowan Filkey's actually a good mate of mine. We played junior footy together when he was in the Riverland and I was at West Adelaide. So it's great to see Rowan rise up the ranks of Cooyonga Golf Club. We've got a big committee of 10 people. I know on the committee there's two women with the same surname, Emmett. So I don't know if that's their sisters or by marriage, but a very, very organized, intelligent, studious committee. It's designed by the club founder, which was H.L. Kagi Rymel. It's a classic traditional style course laid out on sandy, quite undulating parcel of land in Adelaide Sandbelt. There's only been a few changes made to the routing. Crafter and Mogford have enhanced it in recent times and done what I think is a wonderful job. It's currently ranked 20 by the Australian Golf Digest, but I think it might have pushed up higher than that in the Golf Australia magazine rankings as well. Sophie Hilditch, you've played it plenty of times. You've played Australian Amateur Championships there. Tell me what you like about Cooyonga the most.
Well, I've got to say, always well manicured. It's just a beautiful course. We've spoken about it a lot, but they have ability to get their course incredibly firm, including their greens. So what I really like about it is there's a lot of slopes in their greens, a lot of bunkering. I think I've said it before. And it encourages you to be incredibly creative around those greens. You can be looking at a shot from about 30 meters to a short-sided green. You're thinking whether or not, am I lofting this up? Am I playing a bump and run? Am I getting the putter out? So really what I love about Cooyonga is how much it makes my brain work. You just have to get creative around there and it's just stunning. How about you, Hookie?
Yeah, good. I love all of your points. I've got to say what I love is the variation of the par fives and the variation of the par threes. So it starts with two par fives, really unusual. The first one, long hole, probably unreachable for me on any given day. The second, I feel like I can have a pop at it. If I get even a good 3 wood away, I feel like that's reachable in two. So a real contrast in those two. Then you get to the ninth, very, very tight driving hole, but a massive risk reward. If you get your drive away with the bunkers on the left and the hazard on the right, you get a crack at that one in two as well. But then you've got the 16th, which is another really, really long par five, probably again unreachable for me, but an awkward sort of layout. You need to be out as far left as you possibly can, but you kind of want to sneak the corner up the right there, and then you can be blocked by those tree lines. So I love the par fives, and I love the par threes as well. Three's pretty flat, seven's short and uphill, 14, you know, really wind affected. 15's that real long one. And then they've got that spare hole, Soph, that I actually think might become the party hole when Liv does come to town. That is an exceptional par three. It's that one that's just off sort of to the eastern side of the 11th hole there. So I do think what they've done with their par fives and their par threes are absolutely world class.
Yep, very good call.
Let's move on to, and this is tough here because there's not a lot of weaknesses at a course like Cooyonga. Is there anything you don't like?
Yeah, you're right, Hookie. It's pretty hard to pick apart Cooyonga Golf Club. But look, it's probably a gripe that I'm just going to have just because, like you said, I played a lot of tournament golf there. I do think the routing just means a lot of rounds at Cooyonga are particularly slow. Like you said, we start with two par fives. We then roll into a par three. We roll into a blind tee shot, par four. Then a reachable par four for the boys. Another blind shot for your approach shot, par four on the six. And then a par three for the seventh. We've also got two par threes in a row on the back nine. So my only gripe would be I'm actually often waiting on a tee block at Cooyonga Golf Club.
Yeah, no, I do understand that. And I get sort of anecdotal evidence from members who are mate of mine who say, oh, yeah, what a frustrating round. It was 4.5 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't play there enough, and I certainly don't play in their busy times to get a feel for that. But someone like you who has played in those bigger events, I can understand that. If I had one thing that I didn't love, it's that the 6th, the 8th, and the 17th, that I think are all pretty good, very strong par fours, but all three of them, and in particular if you haven't hit a great drive away, but you can be in the middle of the fairway and you can't actually see the green. You've almost got to walk another 50 meters up the fairway just to work out where the flag and the green is. That probably doesn't help speed of play either. But if there was one thing I would say is a bit awkward is that you've got three approaches from the fairway where you can't actually see the green. And one of them might be fine. Maybe even two I could probably cop, but three, yeah, maybe one too many for me.
I'm clearly learning, Hookie. You just don't like blind shots. This was the same argument with the Vines 2 weeks ago. Doesn't like blind shots.
Yeah. They were blind tee shots. So yeah, I'm just grizzling about anything blind. I need to know exactly what's going on. When my shot misses the green by a long way, I want to see it happen in real time, Soph.
See, I'm the complete opposite. I'd prefer to not know. So I'm just hitting blindly, hoping I just hit something. And if I don't actually mind if I don't see it go into a bunker, that's better.
Favorite hole at Cooyonga, Soph?
Oh, it's a no-brainer for me. It's the par three, third hole. It's surrounded by bunkers. It's just a tricky hole. I've got to be honest, there's so many different pin placements they can have here. They can have the sucker short pin, which just means all the bunkers are completely in play. You're completely short-sided. And this green just like tends to all feed into the center of the green. So as soon as you've got a bunker shot, you're just landing straight on a downhill slope onto concrete and it's just bouncing straight away. But then if you have a back pin, it's almost like you want to hit your shot past the green, which is just something I never like saying is that I want to go long. I don't think I ever say on a golf course, long's the play here, but I think it is for a longer pin there. So look, the par three third, I would encourage our listeners actually, Steph Nah, South Australian golfer, had a hole in one in 2018 Australian Open. And as you know, the Women's Aussie Open is going back to Cooyonga next year. I would encourage our listeners to go and have a look at it. It's an incredible hole in one, as all hole in ones are, apart from my co-host hole in one, which was a team one, but every other one normally is. And again, guess who was on the bag that time? Billy Cawthorn. Nope. Billy Cawthorn. Billy Cawthorn is a star. Yep.
He is. What's he? Surely. I mean, Justin Thomas has gone through a few caddies. Sung Jae-im's gone through a few caddies. What's her name on the women's tour? Lydia Ko. She goes through a caddy every 6 weeks. There's a job for Billy there, surely. Probably a better job than working for Andrew Lee at the Bridgewater Inn, I would have thought. My favourite hole is that spare hole, Soph. If anyone ever plays Cooyonga, go play the 10th, walk up to the 11th tee, and I would just suggest that you wander a little bit further over to the east, up the hill, just get up to that spare tee block there. It is an absolute oasis. You wouldn't even know it was there unless you wandered up there, and just have a look down at that slight downhill, gorgeous par three. It is truly one of Australia's best par threes, and it's their spare hole, which I sort of find hard to believe. Now, I'm only saying it's my favourite hole in a very, very, very strong field. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck here at all. It's just one that if ever there is a hole out and they're saying, oh, you got the spare hole in today, I'm very, very happy with that because I just reckon it's a wonderful hole to play.
Oh, it's an incredible hole. It's actually one of their stronger par threes. I reckon the only time I didn't like it, Hookie, is we were playing Pennant. Now, just indulge me here for a little bit. We were playing Pennant. I was warming up and I didn't realize that the 19th was actually our first hole. And to get across the 19th is a fair walk. It's about a 10-minute walk to get there. And I've never been so nervous standing over with an 8-iron and I'm puffed out of breath having to run to that green.
Well, you know, you're only a young, fit kid, Soph. I'm sure you would have been fine. Hey, I ask you every week for a practice hack. What is one little cool practice tip that you use routinely in your own game that maybe the rest of us should take with us? Last week, I'm actually going to go hit some balls after we get off this podcast because you and I are going to Tea Tree Gully very shortly, and I'm going to hit a couple of balls on the way, and I'm going to use an alignment stick. What else should I be doing with my practice?
Well, look, this is actually, I'm leaning into the fact that I'm often a car park golfer, which means I go straight off the car park to the first tee. Yes. And if I do have a bit of time, it's normally getting a coffee from the pro shop. But look, I will say my tip for today, it's pretty simple. It's actually really important to have a dynamic warm-up before you even start hitting balls, which is including, you know, stretching and actually getting your body moving. It's, I'm getting pretty sick of having to listen to people saying, yeah, it took me about 5 holes to warm up on the golf course. Well, how about we actually start getting our body moving before we even start hitting some balls?
Brilliant, Soph. Well done. Yeah, my theory is I had the heater on in the car on the way there, so that's my warm-up. Hey, Soph, always a good chat. So thanks so much for your company, everyone. If I can just say to you, keep an eye out because we'll release it. We'll try and get it onto YouTube. But we're going to do a little deep dive on the Tea Tree Gully Golf Course. I know there'll be a lot of members interested in our thoughts. Mm-hmm. We're going to catch up with Craig Sullivan Brook. So it'll be part of this podcast in a fortnight, but we'll also be putting up those clips on YouTube so you can see how good a golfer Sophie is and how dead set C grade I am. So that should be good fun for everyone. Hey, Soph?
Yeah, definitely will be. I don't know how good my swing's going to be looking after this sinus infection, but we'll see how we go.
Thanks very much, everyone. Enjoyed your company. Wallace, enjoyed chatting to you as well, even though you participated nil whatsoever. You did have a golf trip as well, though, mate. How did it go very quickly?
Yeah, it was great. We headed to Murray Downs, then to Yarrawonga and Black Bull, played down there as well. So the weather was great. Terrific group, 15 lads, and I came second last.
Oh, well, that's interesting because I did see you were wearing a fancy maroon jacket after day one. So did you go from leader on day one to second last?
If you win it, you get it, which is a great honour. But if you lose the day, then you get the jacket. So the first first night I had the jacket. I just wanted to let you know that Steve Alderson is the gentleman you were talking about, Spud.
And Spud.
Spud. And I also just had a little look at the hole-in-one from Steph Nahr back in 2018 on the third hole at Kyonga. And let me ask you, if you remember who she was playing with that day.
Was it Laura Davies?
It was Laura Davies.
Dang, Laura Davies. Soph doesn't miss much.
Boom.
Well... Steph Nahr was playing with Laura Davies and I was playing with Sophie Hilditch.
Bit different.
Hey, great chat, everyone. Always
excellent.
Good.
Looking forward to Tea Tree Gully.
Thanks, guys.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. Look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.